This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamotu, MPR. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
David R.K. Harding,
Isle Hegarty,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Now, David, you were you've been based in Palmerston North for a long time, but your early life, you actually moved around a great deal, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Yes, I started off in England, I moved to Canada, then I came to New Zealand, got married, went to England, and then went back to Canada, and then came back to New Zealand, and I've been here ever since.
Okay, so when did you sort of settle in New Zealand, about what time?
The first time was 1963, and the second time was 1973. And I have not moved. I have been overseas on trips from as an employee of Massey University, but I have not settled anywhere else other than New Zealand since 1973.
Okay, and you've been based in Palmerston North most of that time?
Yes, always have been in Palmerston North.
All right, okay. Now, but you mentioned before we started recording, you mentioned that it was usual for you, or just normal for you, to be moving house very frequently, even from when you were a baby.
Yes, I left England the first time when I was 7. I went to Nigeria, but even before that time I moved around England as a baby. I went to Bristol when I was small, and then as I say, the first time I left England was when I was 7. I went to Nigeria because my father was out there. He'd been out there for 2 years, and we joined him for a year and then came back to England, spent a year or so in England, and then went to Canada for the first time.
So what was he doing in...
He's an accountant. He's an itinerant accountant. He didn't have any special particular occupation that he needed to be overseas. He just liked looking around overseas and wandering around the world, I guess you could say.
And you just saw that as normal? You were happy moving around like that, or you
As a child, I had to. Actually, the family history involved a connection with New Zealand. My grandmother was born in New Zealand. She was a third generation New Zealander. The first Harding that moved out to New Zealand was about something like 1834. My grandmother came to England as a small girl and spent her father came to England as a young man and became an engineer, came back to New Zealand and couldn't stand the country because as a qualified engineer, he didn't like the sheep and bush in New Zealand in those days. So he went back to England with his family and eventually ended up in Chile and Peru, of all places.
Oh. So what sort of engineering was he doing then?
In Chile and Peru. He was involved with building railways, apparently. Mm-hmm. And he ended up dying out there, as far as I can tell, from the family history. And my grandmother and her sister ended up in England and never got back to New Zealand. So my father was actually born in Europe, actually born in France, of all places.
Oh.
But he became a naturalised British citizen.
Yeah. So did that seem, well, I suppose it would be normal to you, but did you find with the children your own age that you were mixing with, going to school and so on, did you stand out as someone different from the other?
Well, I suppose with my English accent when I got to Canada I was a bit different for a while, but I soon seemed to fit in all right. So, and I, for example, in Canada, at high school I played basketball and the Canadian version of the American football, and they didn't seem to bother the local people.
Yeah. So now you also mentioned, I think there was the idea I heard in New Zealand, the idea that people change house every 7 years. I think that if that's an average, there's some who stay in a house for a long time and others much shorter, but
Well, when we arrived in New Zealand, I actually came out to New Zealand by myself ahead of the rest of the family at the age of 19 because of the difference in the school year. So I left Canadian High School in Ontario, where we were living. They had 5 years of high school. I left after 4.5 years, not knowing if I would have to come to high school in New Zealand or whether I could get into university. As it was, I got into university in January, so that was okay. I didn't have to go to high school. I was somewhat concerned about whether I'd have to wear shorts, because in Canada you weren't allowed to wear shorts to school or jeans to school in Canada in those days. So, but anyway, I got into university. That was okay.
Yeah, it was just a surprise for me from England, finding that school boys right up to the end of school were wearing, in fact adults wearing shorts in New Zealand. But when I go back to England now, I see grown men wearing shorts in summer in England, which would never happen when I was
So things are quite different now when I arrived here. Anyway, the family came out and we settled in, but my father, with his accounting job, he got a job in Auckland to begin with, but then he got a job in Christchurch. So the family once again had a short term in Auckland, and we moved to Christchurch, and we had a couple of housing changes in Christchurch in 3 years, and I got married at the end of my first degree at Canterbury University, and went overseas, but went back to England. So after that started the next shift, and I had 2 or 3 housings. We moved up to Cheshire. And then after some months in Cheshire, we moved down near to Berkshire and bought a masonette there for a couple of years, and then went to Canada.
Yeah,
keep on moving.
So does that mean that you've got friends all over the world from these travels?
Yes, but we've lost contact with them now, because that was some 40 years ago now, of course.
What about family? If the family, your family generally, most of them moved around a lot, did they? Or?
No, not the rest of the family. My father's sister, we got to know her in England when we were there in the early days. But she's passed on now, of course, like my parents have the years. But and some of my mother's family in England, we got to know them when we were there in the early days.
Yeah.
We've lost contact with what's left of them.
So was your impression then that New Zealand and Canada were fairly similar? Or I mean, the thing that strikes me is the difference in weather, but otherwise...
It's just a personal thing, but I find that, for me, Canada and New Zealand are similar in a sense that New Zealand and Australia and Canada and the United States, there's a similarity in those two comparisons, you know. I'm not saying that there aren't some Bolshie people in New Zealand, there aren't some Bolshie people in Canada, but the overall, the Canadians and the New Zealanders are a little bit quieter, more reserved people than the Americans and the Australians overall. But we've got some very nice American friends and some very nice Canadian friends as well, of course.
But you found the adjustment from Canada to New Zealand was quite easy?
It wasn't particularly difficult at all. Coming to New Zealand was quite straightforward.
When I
got off the boat the first time, I came to New Zealand, came by boat from, took a train across Canada by myself, and the boat came down the west coast of the States, crossed to Hawaii, Fiji, and then Auckland, and I got off the boat there. I was met unexpectedly by a New Zealand relative, a cousin, a multitudinous distanced cousin who met me and looked after me and housed me for a few days.
Oh,
and
very nice.
Helped me find a place near Auckland University to live and everything. Very kind.
So what was the choice to come to New Zealand for university?
Oh, because my grandmother was a New Zealander. The reason for coming, the reason we stopped off in Canada for 10 years was because my father, after the war, could not get an assisted passage out as an accountant. He, in order to get it, sorry, I should have mentioned this okay. before. Had he been a plumber, a carpenter, an applied person, he probably could have got an assisted passage for the family after World War II. So
the aim was they really wanted to come to New Zealand, but hadn't been able.
Yeah, because of his connection, because of his
marriage. Yeah.
I haven't mentioned that there was a New Zealand great aunt for my father. Visited New Zealand once or twice as he was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So he had had a connection from his mother's family.
Right. So basically the idea was at some stage the family would come here.
At some stage come to New Zealand.
Yeah.
And so... So he thought he'd try Canada as on the way.
Mm.
So and I guess you could say that coming to New Zealand was precipitated by me coming to the end of high school, because I said, "Are we looking at going to New Zealand or not?" Because turning the clock back a bit to Canada, at the end of high school, there was a program in Ontario, as far as I can remember, whereby the Prime Minister at the time was trying to keep the unemployment level, this sounds weird now, the unemployment level below 4%. Because it was deemed that if the unemployment level went above 4% unemployed in Canada, that party that was in charge of the country at the time would not survive the next election.
Yeah, there was an idea like that in Britain of at one stage of 3%, when the workplace was very stable and you have a career, you know, you get in a job for life basically. Yeah. Then.
So the idea was that if you could keep as many of the kids finishing high school as possible.
Mm.
Go get them going to university, polytech, and training schools and training programs as possible. Keep them off the job market. Then you could keep the unemployment rate down.
Yeah,
and I was told by the guidance teacher that I should go to university.
Mm.
So I said to my father, "Look, are we staying in Canada or are we going to New Zealand?"
Yeah.
So that's what precipitated me coming to New Zealand.
So you were able to go to university in New Zealand as a New Zealand citizen?
I was a British citizen.
Okay.
I hadn't taken out Canadian citizenship yet. I was a Canadian resident, I suppose you would say.
Okay.
Anyway, I stepped off the boat and I had to pay the student fees that year because I wasn't a New Zealand citizen or a New Zealand resident.
Oh, okay. So
I got a book allowance or something. They gave me a book allowance of £20 or £30 or something like that.
So you were considered an overseas student?
Yeah. And then the second year I got everything paid for because I passed my papers.
But I suppose that was a time when the local students wouldn't have had to pay any fees. Were there many overseas students here at that stage?
I honestly can't remember.
No, you wouldn't. So, what subject did you study?
Oh, chemistry. I think I took chemistry, physics. Not physics. Chemistry, maths, and geology.
Okay. And then you went on. You ended up with a
chemistry honours degree. When I went down to Christchurch the second year, they said, "We want you to take honours." And I said, "Why?" Well, because they just started an honours program. Honours is just something was brand new in those days. Never heard of it before. And I said, "Why?" And then anyway, I said, "I don't particularly want to take honours." They said, "Well, tell you what, you sign up for it, and if you don't do very well, you can drop it." I managed to swan through, so ended up with a 4-year degree.
Yeah. Did you have any idea what you wanted to move on to then?
Oh, I wanted to stay with chemistry. because I did very well with that in the first year.
Okay.
And that's what I've been with ever since.
But if you didn't want to do honours, what would you have done with a three-year chemistry degree?
Oh, I would have looked around for a job. At the end of the at the end of the 4 years, I was offered a job in New Plymouth, actually, with Ivan Watkins Dow.
You're talking about what year would this be, roughly?
Oh, I got married in 1966, and we headed off overseas back to England.
Okay. So you finished your honours in 66?
Yeah.
Okay. So then you went back to England. So your family had been thinking, we're going to go to New Zealand eventually. And you said, when are we going? You went there, you got your degree, and then you thought, well, off we go.
Well, my wife, Jan, wanted to go overseas. That's why.
Ah, okay. So you mean you've been telling her all these stories about marvellous places elsewhere, and she thought...
Well, she always wanted to go overseas anyway. So I said, okay, I'll take you overseas, but I didn't realise it would. It meant I had to look after her for 50 or 60 years.
Oh, yeah. So did she have aspirations of having a career as well?
I don't know if she did or not. You'll have to ask her that.
Okay. But you had an amicable arrangement whereby you were the provider and she was the homemaker, or did she work? Okay.
I don't know if we had an arrangement or not. We just decided to go overseas together.
Yeah. Yeah, but you were married already.
Yeah, we were married. We did get married properly.
So did you actually plan any of your life, or just on impulse?
No, it was just we went to England to see, and we were much, I think, to her mother or her parents, and discussed. I think they thought we'd just be overseas for a year or 18 months or 2 years, but we were overseas for 7 years. Mm-hmm. In the long run, came back with a daughter.
All right. Did they go over and see you while you were out? No. So you had no phone calls or something, maybe? No.
Well, we might have had the odd phone call, but they were damned expensive in those days.
I know, yeah. Yeah.
Damned expensive. Yeah. Very expensive.
Yeah, you time it to the minute, don't you?
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
Hmm. They're not like now, where you can phone up for nothing on
WhatsApp and all on through the internet, all that. Yeah, video calls and everything.
We have quite long video calls now. We've got a son and two grandchildren in Ottawa, of all places, funnily, but still connected with Canada.
Yeah. So now, my view, because I looked at sort of New Zealand and Canada, and both seem sort of quite nice, but Canada, you got all the cold winters. Is that...
Well, the interesting thing with Canada now is you spend an awful lot of time inside, because in Ottawa, it's got hot and humid in the summer as well. So you live inside in an air-conditioned house in the summer as well now. So I remember when we lived... When I was, my second time in Canada was in London, Ontario.
Mm.
First time was in and around close to Toronto in a satellite city, Oakville. And she used to lie in beds at night just sweating, you know, because of the humidity at times. When it wasn't humid, it wasn't so bad, but you get that humidity just hanging over it.
So the summers were unpleasant. Were the winters unpleasant as well, then, or?
They can be, but if it's cold and dry, it's not so bad. You can actually, if you're out shoveling snow out of a driveway or something, as long as it's between 0 and 10, minus 10...
Mm.
You can actually work quite comfortably as long as you're working. But if you stop to talk to a neighbour and you've been sweating, you know, that can get a bit uncomfortable because it soon get cold. But you can actually work between 0 and minus 10. I took off in a rental car one time to go sort of get some shopping or something, and the guy on the radio said, "Hey, folks, it's minus 30 outside." His friend, his companion on the radio said, "No, it isn't." So the other guy said, "What do you mean?" He said, "It's minus 36 wind chill factor." I thought, minus 30, minus 36, who cares? It's bloody cold. Whatever.
Yeah, I found that sort of in reverse in the Middle East when it was 30, which was sort of normal, it felt warm. It got up to 40, and I just thought, oh, it's just still warm. But for the locals, it was a massive difference because they were sensitive to it.
No, once you get over 30, it's quite hot.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember being in a little black rental car one time. I wasn't driving, but I felt, boy, it feels hot, warm in this car. Got outside and it was way over 40. Mm-hmm. I was glad to get back in the warm, central air-conditioned car.
Yes, makes a difference. Yes. So where was that?
Egypt.
Oh, right.
I've been to Egypt a few times. It can get hot there.
Yeah.
Cairo,
yeah.
Especially. Mm. Alexandria is not so bad.
Yeah,
it's near the sea.
Yeah,
okay. By the sea. It is on the sea.
So what took you to Egypt then? You hadn't mentioned that one.
Oh, I've had graduate students from there.
Hmm.
The first one I had was in order to have him as a student, he got a scholarship.
Hmm.
And part of the scholarship was I had to go to Egypt for 2 weeks. So they flew me there, and I I thought I would have to be teaching him or listen to him being taught and the stuff, but basically it was a holiday trip. I went all over the place.
Okay.
I went up to Alexandria, and then we had an overnight bus trip down to the Red Sea, Hurghada, and places like that, and he showed me pyramids and all sorts of stuff, and basically I got off the plane and we went to a bank and they gave me some money.
So who gave the scholarship then?
Or Egypt. It's an Egyptian scholarship.
Oh, okay. And this was through, they were doing something through Massey, and you were...
Well, the scholarship was for him to come to Massey. He'd already done a year of a program, but this was for him to come to Massey to do 2 years of a program at Massey. And somehow or other, he managed to fiddle it, so he got this degree out of Massey, not out of the university in Egypt, which he was supposed to have done it. How the hell he did that, I don't know. So he reckoned that would be better for his CV.
Yeah, yeah.
And
he came over to New Zealand?
Yes, he came over. Okay. He was here for...
Yeah.
And he actually spent some time in the flat above our garage.
Oh, okay.
When his family came out for a while.
Yeah.
And everything. How the hell he worked all this stuff, I don't know. But they're quite good some students are quite good at these sort of things.
Hmm.
But anyway, he spent 2 weeks taking me all around Egypt, showing me things.
Yeah.
And because I thought I'd have to work when I got there, but it was basically a 2 week holiday.
Yeah, wow.
But it's very interesting.
It might be part of the system that you would feel obligated to make sure he passes. If
yes, and then the other part of the scholarship was his Egyptian primary supervisor came out here for 2 weeks.
Okay.
And I had to look after him, which was an interesting challenge, to say the least.
Uh-huh. But he spoke good English?
Oh, yeah, no, there's no problem. No, the supervisors in Egypt, my age, also speak Russian. A lot of them did postdocs in Russia, and or PhDs in Russia.
Yeah, and they were, I suppose, they'd be good quality academics. Really,
most of them.
Was it a very different sort of training, you think, or
I don't you know. I honestly can't tell you, but They obviously, I don't know about now, but in those days, obviously learned to speak Russian, and whether they wrote, they must have written their PhDs in Russian, I suppose, English, I don't know. But over the years that I've been involved with them, there's a big focus on their students doing PhDs, if not in the States or Europe, States. The big focus for chemistry students was Germany.
Yes, yeah.
Germany was a big focus before all this COVID business started. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah, So you were actually employed at Massey?
All the time, the last 48 years at Massey, yeah, since 73.
Okay, in chemistry?
Yes.
In what department or school?
It's now called the School, well, it was called the School of Fundamental Sciences. It's just been changed in the School of Natural Sciences, but it was the School of Industrial Sciences. And then before that, it was the Faculty of Science.
Yeah, that's it. I found the same. You don't have to change job; they just relabel.
I don't know what this is all about. It's just management stuff these days.
But you were, so your work, your research, and so on was essentially chemistry.
Yeah, chemistry.
Okay.
This is part one of two. Listen next week for part two.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you're a fan of NPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.